Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys break down the weekend box office totals, some movie news, our personal flair in the second segment, and of course, your recent movie review. This week, we're going to be reviewing Jason Statham's Beekeeper, directed by David Ayer. I'm sure we're going to have some very divisive opinions on this movie, but we'll get to that in segment three. But of course, I'm joined, as always, by the one and only JTE, and of course, the illustrious worker bee himself, Benny Hamlin. Gentlemen, happy, how are you today?
Happy to be here.
Oh.
Clever.
See what you did there. I'm protecting the hive. Let's see how many times Jason can say ready. That.
You gotta be ready for my puns.
Oh.
These are so lazy. I'm just using the word B.
Just be quiet while I get through the box office totals, would you?
Yes, there we go. Perfect use. Go ahead.
Well, of course, we are going to cover the box office. And this past weekend, Mean Girls was the new release, big hit, $28 million for Mean Girls the Musical. Coming in at number two, the movie we will be talking about today, Beekeeper, with $16.5 million. Number three, Wonka, with $8.4 million, $176 million domestic. That movie is doing exceptionally well. Number four, Anyone But You, with another $7.1 million, $55 million domestic for that movie so far. Number five is Migration, with $6.2 million. Six, Aquaman The Lost Kingdom, $5.2 million, $108 million domestic for that one. Number seven, Night Swim, $4.6 million, $19.1 million total domestic. Number eight, Gunter Karam, with $4.1 million in its U.S. debut. Number nine, The Boys in the Boat, with $3.4 million. And rounding out our top ten, The Book of Clarence, with $2.5 million. The Iron Claw just out of the top ten, with $2.4 million, making it the 11th movie at the box office this weekend. JT, lots of numbers. As always, I'm going to ask you the fateful question. You heard the tale of the numbers. What does it tell you?
I think it was a good idea to put Mean Girls in the theaters because originally it was supposed to be a straight-to-streaming movie. I think it was for Peacock or Hulu, one of those streaming apps. And I guess they tested really well, and they decided, hey, let's give this a theatrical treatment. It was a smart move by them. I mean, there's a lot of love for that first film. I actually did go see this this past weekend, and it's 2 hours long. It's actually longer than the original because you have to add in all that music. And as you guys know, I'm not a big musical guy, although the musicals I do tend to enjoy are comedic when they're not taking themselves too seriously and they're trying to just be kind of over the top and funny. You know, anything South Park, the movie is like one of my favorite musicals. I just love that movie. I thought the music was just okay, and a lot of the jokes were recycled. There was some new fun stuff, and I do think that casting is actually one of the highlights of this new film. But overall, it's one of those things where I don't see myself going to the musical before I go to the original with Lindsay Lohan and Rachel McAdams. I just think overall those are the ones I'm...
JT, you muted yourself, dude.
My bad. I'm sorry. I accidentally muted myself. Hold on. I'm back. There we go. Sorry, I was getting a little bit of feedback from Benny's mic, so I was trying to mute him while I was talking. Anyway, I'll revamp what I said. Mean Girls, better than I thought it was going to be. Still not going to go to that one before I go to the original. I think it was a smart move by them to bring it to theaters because this year is actually pretty late on new movies. And I think, you know, this actually filled a gap. They probably would have just put this on streaming. I don't think people were going to run and sign up for the streaming app for Mean Girls, but they did run out and see it in the movie theater because of the fans got to kind of get together and enjoy it together and see the musical. I do think plays well in the theater because you kind of feel the energy of the people almost like you're at a concert. So overall, that's my thoughts on Mean Girls. And Beekeeper did way better than projected. People love seeing Jason Statham kick ass. And I think word of mouth is going to help this movie. And I think it's going to actually have a little bit of legs.
Nice. Well, Benny, you heard the tale of the numbers. What does it tell you, buddy?
I think this was poor collaboration between the studios. I don't know that. I know they don't necessarily coordinate with one another, but there were a lot of musicals released in the exact same window. Like, if you notice in the top 10, The Color Purple is already out of the top 10 in 2 weeks. And that's like, I think each of these movies, they could have made more money even than they are making, but they are cannibalizing one another. Wonka has clearly been the one that's had like the staying power, but I think definitely The Color Purple's entire audience got cannibalized by the other two. And considering that Wonka is still pulling in pretty decent numbers, I think Mean Girls, you know, if this was something that was released in 2 months from now, sort of in that dead period right at the end of February, I think it could have even made more money than it had. So I think it was just a weird decision by all of these people to all release musicals within 3 weeks of each other, since it's a niche audience. They're just using it all up. But I mean, all of them but The Color Purple are going to end up making more money than they spent. So, you know, good for them. And other than that, I don't have a lot of great insights other than that every time there's a big Indian movie released, there's clearly a very established audience for that. It's like low-budget horror movies. It's like almost clockwork. When there's a big Bollywood movie or when there's a low-budget horror movie, you're going to get $7 million worth of people to come out and see that in the first week. So as long as your budget's not insane, you're going to make some money on that. So I think those are my two big takeaways.
I also just want to add, you know, I'm sad to hear the Iron Claw fell out of the top 10 already. We did a whole episode on it last week, and I thought we did a great job of covering it, but it was actually one of our lowest downloaded episodes in a long time. I think just a lot of people have not gone out and seen that movie. And I hope the people who did listen to our show, if you didn't get to the spoilers, I hope it convinces them to go check it out. I think it's already going to be streaming like within the next month and a half. I already saw a date for the streaming date. It's hitting Blu-ray and streaming pretty quickly. So maybe they're trying to use some of that goodwill, because unfortunately, it's also not getting any awards. You know, I thought maybe this might get some awards during, you know, the Golden Globes and SAG. It's really getting nothing. So I understand why they're kind of streamlining it to home video, because, you know, you did all this advertising throughout the fall. May as well try to use that to get some word of mouth on it.
I think a lot of people look at that as a wrestling movie. And I think there is a fervent fan base for wrestling, but I also think like that is one set of fan base. Like Benny said, it's niche. And I think it has a niche following. And I think a lot of people look at that movie and it's got two things going against them. One, it's a wrestling movie. And then two, it's a Zac Efron wrestling movie. And let's be honest, Zac Efron hasn't really put out anything good in a long time. So I do think the general movie going public doesn't give a shit about this. I think those are the people going to see Mean Girls. Those are the people going and paying money to see Wonka. If you are going to go to the movies once a month, if that, or casually, which is pretty much what the casual moviegoers do, you're not going to pay to see the Iron Claw. So it's not surprising to me to see that. I'm still very much looking forward to it. I mean, you guys had universally good things to say about it, so I am still looking forward to it. It should be on my movie channel next week, so I should be able to tell you my thoughts on how it or thoughts and feelings on that. But I wanted to ask you a question, JT. You said something about like comparing like the original Mean Girls to this new musical version of Mean Girls. Are you a fan of the original Mean Girls movie?
I am. I was a huge fan of it. I'm a huge Tina Fey fan. I love 30 Rock. Watched it religiously. I even rewatched during COVID. I just watched the whole series again from beginning to end. And when I watched Mean Girls, I see Tina Fey's voice throughout that film, her style of comedy. I think it's cast really well. It's a very funny movie. I enjoyed it when it came out, and I still enjoy it to this day. And I'll still always put it above this musical.
And I'll say another thing that is working against Iron Claw is that I think the wrestling fan base is actually a lot larger than people think it is. I mean, even like now when it's not at its peak popularity. There are still millions of people that watch it every week, but this movie is about wrestlers that have no name recognition among these wrestling fans. Yeah. These are wrestlers from the 70s that was in a small regional promotion. So even if you were like a big WWF fan, like the Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant days, these are not necessarily wrestlers that you're going to know about. So like the draw for this is a very, very small audience. And I didn't think that it had much of a chance at any awards push because one, people, even if he is become a very good actor, people don't really view Zac Efron as an awards caliber actor, regardless of the performances he turns in. And this is not a subject matter that's going to connect with a lot of the people that do the voting in these things.
I will say Chris Hemsworth is making a Hulk Hogan movie. So I'm curious to see how that movie does once it comes out. I'm sure they're not going to touch into the second half of his career. I think it mainly takes place in the 80s. And I think that will have much more appeal because everybody knows Hulk Hogan is. Like, everyone just knows Hulk Hogan. And Chris Hemsworth starring as him, I think that's going to make a lot of money. I will say, hopefully the Iron Claw has a little bit more of a life, you know, on home video and streaming. And I think time will be the judge. And I think it'll be a much beloved film that we'll look back years from now and be like, man, that movie didn't get what it deserved.
Well, I'm still holding out hope that we're going to get the Andre the Giant movie played by Jason Segel.
Yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit of movie news, boys. Did you guys watch the Spaceman trailer, the new Adam Sandler movie starring Adam Sandler, Carey Mulligan, and Paul Dano as a giant alien spider?
Yeah. I was really excited for this trailer because I love the director's miniseries on HBO called Chernobyl. Ooh, I think was one of the, it's like to me, masterpiece level, all time great limited series. Fantastic. And you know, that guy came from music videos and that was like his first big project and he absolutely knocked it out of the park. So I was really excited for this movie, but I'll be honest, this is not what I was expecting. I was expecting maybe something more commercial. I didn't expect a talking spider like Lord of the Rings coming out of here. Paul Dano, you know, Paul Dano just loves weird movies. He was in, you know, Swiss Army Man with a farting corpse. Like, yeah. He fits perfectly for what I feel like what they're trying to do. And you got Carey Mulligan in this also coming off of Maestro. She will be nominated for Best Actress. And once again, it looks like she plays Sandler's wife who's back on Earth. This looks like it's going to be a real trippy ass movie. So it doesn't look very commercial to me. So I think Netflix is probably a safe place for this. I don't know if people would have ran to the theater. If they did, I think a lot of people would get angry because they thought they were going to see Adam Sandler space comedy. Instead, they got whatever the heck this movie is going to be, which I think will be interesting. I think it'll be better than any Adam Sandler other Netflix movie, which are usually just pure crap. I'm excited to see what this director does. I trust him, but like, yeah, the trailer wasn't exactly, it's not going to set the internet on fire.
So Adam Sandler, when he veers away from comedy and he does his actor movies, they're very seldom linear. You know, they're usually not easily digestible, like whether it's Punch Drunk Love, Uncut Gems, things like that. He doesn't go for, I guess, things that can easily reach out and grab people generally when he does his serious stuff. And this looks like it's right along that. It's going to be a really odd, hard to digest, probably very serious movie with not a lot of levity. Because that's what he does when he veers away from comedy. And he usually does a really good job when he does that. So I'm sure there'll be really good performances in the movie. But I also don't think it's probably going to be a very fun movie, but I don't think that's what they're setting out to do.
I think Adam Sandler is a very underrated dramatic actor. I agree with you, Benny. The serious Sandler movies are hard to digest. They're tricky. Yeah, that's a good way to put that. Like Uncut Gems is an uncomfortable movie for me to watch because I just have anxiety throughout the entire movie. And that's great direction in that movie, and that's a great performance by Sandler. But I do actually enjoy seeing Sandler in more serious roles, especially recently, because honestly, like Sandler in the last 10 years has put out nothing good. The contract that he signed, I mean, comedic wise, let me clarify, his dramatic work has been outstanding. I'm shocked he wasn't in, like, he didn't get really any accolades whatsoever or any awards whatsoever for Uncut Gems. And that whole movie gives you that anxiety because of the performance that he puts on. But the contract that Sandler signed with Netflix was like a 7-movie contract. And those movies that he put out were horrible. Hubie Halloween, awful. The Ridiculous Six.
They're awful.
Just terrible movies. Like, I like seeing Sandler in a serious role like this. This movie looks super curious to me. He's a space explorer. He's on this like long mission. He's been on his own for 6 months. And at when he's at his like loneliest and when he's at his most stressed, this giant alien spider shows up, voiced by Paul Dano. It's such a bizarre concept, but you know what? I'm excited for it. I think Dano had a great year. He's had a great couple of years of acting. Everything from The Batman, your guys' favorite. It's a good movie, remember.
Hey, I like Dano in it. I had no issue with Dano.
And then he was in, what was the Spielberg?
Meet the Fablemans.
The Fablemans. He was in that Dumb Money movie. I enjoyed the Dumb Money movie. I thought he was the best part of the movie. So Dano's been on a bit of a roll. And like you said, he likes these weird, quirky roles. He's going to kill it as, you know, Sheila the Spider or Aragog. You know, shout out to my Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter fans out there for understanding that reference. But yeah, I'm intrigued by this movie. Mulligan's hot coming off of Maestro. So obviously when you're at that kind of level of heat that Carey Mulligan is at, you get to choose your projects strategically. And so if she's deciding to put her name on this, there's something special about this movie. And I agree with JT. I loved the Chernobyl miniseries. It was outstanding. Like, I understand the criticism that, like, oh, it took place in Russia, but nobody has a Russian accent. Fucking get over it. The movie Valkyrie, Tom Cruise is like a German commander in that movie, and he's basically the most American guy you can get. So,
Benny, have you seen Chernobyl? I'm curious. I feel like this would be right up your alley.
I have not seen Chernobyl.
Highest it, recommendation.
Yeah.
Highest recommendation.
Yep.
I watched that Nazi movie you recommended me where they all sit in a room and talk about, what was that called?
Conspiracy.
Yes, I watched that movie. So I watched that. I think if you like that, I think you will like Chernobyl.
The Nazi movie.
Yes. And on your recommendation, JT, I watched Brotherhood of the Wolf last week.
First, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. When I finished it, I literally said to my wife, I think he's fucking with me. I think he had me watch this movie just to fuck with me.
That movie is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's three movies in one. It's a milkshake of a movie, martial arts, monster movie, period piece, French Revolution, sexual tension. It has everything. It is a buffet of a movie.
Well, I'm shocked we're going to talk about this, but guys, this is movie news. Pauly Shore, yes, the weasel himself, Pauly Shore, is set to play one of the world's most famous fitness gurus, Richard Simmons, in a biopic. Now, according to the article that I read, Simmons has nothing to do with this movie. He's not putting his stamp on this, but Pauly Shore has been fan cast, I guess, for a long time to play Richard Simmons. And a studio is going to take a shot on bringing Pauly Shore back to play Richard Simmons. There's no news yet if this is going to be a comedy, a spoof, or if this is Pauly Shore in a dramatic role. But I saw this and I couldn't like pass up the opportunity to ask you guys your thoughts on Pauly Shore playing Richard Simmons. Benny, hit me with your opinions, buddy.
I don't know. I'm So here, like, if they do this a lot, like they did the Daniel Radcliffe Weird Al movie, where it's a parody within its own self, I think that would be a good fit for Pauly Shore in this kind of thing. I don't really know if Pauly Shore during dramatic work, I'm sure he has in the last 20 years, but nothing that I've ever seen. So I don't know if he could carry a dramatic movie. He wouldn't have been my first choice for any movie. So I am curious about it either way it goes. I don't foresee any way this comes out well or is in any way respectful to Richard Simmons, you know, but like, it's like when you're driving by a wreck on the highway and you turn and then you almost hit the guy in front of you because you're looking at the other wreck. I think it's going to have that kind of energy to it.
Wow. Do you guys see Weird last year, the Weird album film starring? Right. Did you see that, Benny?
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry. I must have totally missed you say that. I zoned out for a second. I'm sorry. That's the approach I want to see for this movie. And let Weird Al direct it also. Like, that's kind of what I would like to see happen with this film. Otherwise, Pauly Shore did a film called Pauly Shore is Dead. It was a movie that really low budget that he shot himself. And there's a scene where he actually has like a dramatic scene in the film where he's like breaks down crying to the ghost of Sam Kennison, to give you some context. So he showed a little bit of range. I was a little impressed by all these comedians turn actors, dramatic actors, are usually really good. Robin Williams, you know, Adam Sandler, you know, Steve Martin. Like, these guys have some deep skeletons, I feel like, buried below that they're able to bring it back some sort of dramatic side. So I'm not going to count Pauly Shore out. I think there's a chance he could possibly surprise us all and do a good job. Whether the movie's good or not, I don't know, because I don't really know, like you said, Moose, what the tone is, what they're going for. But I'll definitely be on my radar. And that first trailer, I think, will tell us everything we need to know.
My only concern is if Pauly Shore has like a well of a dramatic actor in him, and he may well, it seems like it would have come out in the last 20 years of his banishment from the big time. At some point, he would have done some indie drama to start getting his name back out there. But he's not. He's just been MIA, and I think there's probably a decent reason for that. But you never know. Maybe this is the one role where he gets the performance of a lifetime, but I don't hold out a lot of hope for it.
I will give you guys 100-1 odds. No, I'm going to say 1,000-1 odds that Pauly Shore gets an Oscar nomination for this role as Richard Simmons.
That would be amazing.
This is going to be a train wreck. Look, what made Weird work so well was it's the Weird Al Yankovic story twisted in the Weird Al Yankovic way, right? The guy writes spoof songs for a living. Like, that's his bread and butter. So, of course, his biopic is going to be a spoof of what actually happened in his life. Richard Simmons was a fitness guru for 20 years. There are millions of people who bought his workout tapes. He had television shows. He had live speaking events. Like, this guy was the top of the fitness world. I work in the fitness industry. Like, I can tell you, like, Richard Simmons was a big deal for a long time. There was nothing really funny about that guy's life that makes me go like, well, if they do a spoof of it with Pauly Shore, maybe it would work. It really wouldn't. Like, Richard Simmons was a serious character for a very long time. Yes, he was very flamboyant and he wore very flamboyant outfits. You know, he was like kind of like an Elton John of like the fitness industry type thing. But, you know, Richard Simmons was also homosexual. And so there's that he had to deal with for years and years and years. So, like, there's a serious story to be told. So I don't think a spoof of this man's life and the fact that Richard Simmons is like, I want no part of this, makes me think that this is going to just be a spoof, but it's going to be funny. It's not actually going to be like a biopic. I think it's going to be making fun of Richard Simmons. And for that, I'm like, I'm not on board. Pauly Shore can stay in the banishment of bad 90s comedians that just couldn't crack a real acting gig.
I know this is going longer, but like Richard Simmons, at least in my memory of him growing up, was always really guarded about his personal and like real life. Like he was like, you know, like in talk shows and anything, because he was always on like the Tonight Show and things like that when I was growing up. He was always really resistant to going anything beyond the character, which I think the reason that I would say a spoof is because this is not someone that seems like they would want you delving in to their sexuality, to their like interpersonal conflicts. So if you were going to make a movie that was any way respectful to them, it would be just making the movie based on the character that he put forth in the public eye, which was kind of silly a lot of times.
That's fair. Well, guys, I'm going to cover one more story. We had a few more, but we're running a little long. But I did want to cover this because it's Ghostbusters news. So, of course, we're going to cover this. The new Empire magazine came out with a bunch of behind the scenes, a bunch of photos from the upcoming Ghostbusters Frozen Empire movie. And one of them revealed that Annie Potts was going to have a larger role and that she was more than likely going to be suiting up and actually taking on the role of a Ghostbuster. In interviewing Annie Potts, Annie Potts also let a little bit slip. And I wanted to run this through you guys because we were talking about this before the show, Benny, when you were watching the Spaceman trailer. And JT and I both had the exact same thought. So I'm gonna lead off with you. So Annie Potts, one, this is a two-part question. How do you feel about Annie Potts, Janine Melnis, suiting up to be a Ghostbuster finally? And then B, one of her comments was that there was going to be surprise guests from the past that would show up in this movie. How do you feel about Janine Melnis being a Ghostbuster? And who do you think the surprise guests from the past will be?
I don't know. That wouldn't be something that I would go with. She was never sort of in the action in the original movies. I don't think that makes a lot of sense for the character, but again, I don't know what they're doing in the movie. So if it makes sense for the character in the story, that's cool. If they're just doing it for nostalgia bait, it's not something that I would prefer. I hope Rick Moranis is there. That would be like the holy grail of who's coming back. Cause one, Rick Moranis is an icon. His movies were, you know, big part of my childhood, Strange Brew, Ghostbusters. So anything would get Rick Moranis back into movies, I'm all for it. I kind of think they may be referring to Slimer or William Atherton's character, Peck. I think those are probably more likely than Lewis Tully, but I'm hoping for Lewis Tully.
So that was exactly when I told JT about this story, that was exactly who JT and I both said. We both said, we hope it's Rick Moranis. We hope Lewis Tully will be coming back. Like you said, that's the holy grail of like Ghostbusters appearances. And if you remember from Ghostbusters 2, Lewis Tully suited up at the end of the movie. He showed up. Slimer gave him a ride on the bus to go to the Natural History Museum. So I really am hoping that it is Rick Moranis. We have not seen Rick Moranis in really anything aside from that poor man getting his ass kicked in New York a year ago. And Rick Moranis retired from the Hollywood life. His wife had passed away. He decided to raise his kids. But I do think like if the Ghostbusters Afterlife paid such like a beautiful homage to the Ghostbusters, and now they're continuing and it's a legacy sequel. So if Moranis was going to come back for one role, I feel like Lewis Tully might be his most famous role. Why wouldn't he show up? I'm inclined to agree with you, Benny, that we probably will get a Walter Peck or a Slimer coming back in some capacity. But I really hope it's going to be Moranis.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. Rick Moranis would be the greatest. I saw an interview with Rick Moranis a couple years ago, and he said he was open to coming back and doing these roles, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kid and stuff. He said just no one's called him. He said, my phone hasn't been ringing. So, Hollywood, get off your ass. Why are you not putting Rick Moranis in any movies? He should be in so many things. He's a, you know, American treasure. Yeah, It has to be Maria's. That'd be the best, if, especially with Annie Potts having a bigger role. Like, you kind of get some sort of what's going on. Are they together? Because we didn't really – we saw her in the first film. She didn't say if she was married or not. Maybe that's her husband. I don't know. If it can't be Rick Moranis, it should be the art teacher, the art director guy. It's Viggo. It's
Viggo. Janos Poha.
Bring him back. I would love a cameo from this guy. He survived. He got slimed. He was feeling good at the end. Ghostbusters 2. So bring him back. You know what would be a great cameo? It'd be for the diehard Ghostbusters people. If you gave like Eddie Murphy a one scene as a Ghostbuster, because he was originally written in the script to star in original Ghostbusters, but decided not to do it. If you could have just get him to like be like, you know, somebody's cousin, you know, Ernie Hudson's cousin comes in to help him, that would be an awesome little nod to the original Ghostbusters. But
or I can't wait for that movie. Yeah, John Candy is the neighbor.
Yes. Oh man, that'd be great.
Okay, I take it back. My new hope is that we get Janos Poha. He's Viggo. That's my new hope. Great. That's the cameo I want.
Okay, perfect. Wait, you know, Sigourney Weaver, her kid, we never saw him grown up either. Who would you cast as the grown up baby?
Oh, shit. You could get Oscar.
Right?
Little Maybe baby Oscar. Oh, of course. Yeah, that would make total sense. Oh, man. Who would be a good Oscar?
How Patton old would Oscar be right now, though?
Patton Oswalt.
I think he's too old.
He would be 35.
Okay, around 35.
Because it was what? Took place in 1989?
Yes.
Ghostbusters 2 did?
Who's in our 30s that would be a good, like, I mean, just get Chris Evans now. Why not?
Well, he was the secretary in the all-female Ghostbusters.
No, that's
Chris Evans. Gotcha. Yeah,
get Chris Evans in there. Oscar's just a handsome SOB. I don't know. Somebody fun would be in there. I guess it'd be fun to get a comedian there. I don't know who, but I would like to see him pop up. That'd be cool. I just want to see. I love nostalgia. I've told you this. I'll eat it up. Feed me everything you can. Give me every character. Bring them all back.
Come on, Glenn Powell. Let's go, buddy.
There we go.
You're Oscar Barrett, buddy. Well, folks, we are going to take a quick break, but be sure to stick around. In our next segment, we're going to review all of our favorite Jason Statham movies. So stick around. Oy, that was a horrible Statham, but please stick around. There will be less of that, I promise.
Dad, why'd we move out here?
Beautiful house, horse trails. What else could we ask for? All right.
Good night.
Hello.
I've got your kid.
Honey!
Help me! I'm really scared. Please hurry.
Trust me, I'm coming.
Dad!
Homefront, December 6th.
How's your day been, Luke?
Started lousy. Yeah, but it's looking up.
Luke Wright, Big Apple's hardest cop once upon a time.
She's got the code.
That girl does not leave this city.
What the hell did you do, kid?
Close every exit out of Manhattan.
Are you crazy?
All we want is the girl, Luke.
Now you're dealing with me.
You broke his trachea.
I didn't know a trachea could break.
Hold on.
Been in restaurants all night. All I got served was lead.
Safe. Rated R. In theaters April 27th.
Welcome back, everybody. And now on to our favorite segment, the Extra Movie Butter segment. In honor of the man himself, Statham, the action man, the Brit, the one and only. We're going to be talking about our favorite Statham movies. Now, he's done a bunch. I'm curious because GTE is our kind of action aficionado here. I have a very different list, I feel like, from everyone else because I'm not the action guy. So we got to lead off with GTE. I want to hear what your But give us your first one off of your list, pal.
Yeah, it's interesting because Statham is usually the number two guy or the villain. Like, he's never, you know, he does lead a lot of movies, but the movies where he's the lead aren't always the best. There are good ones out there, but even when you get some of the B-type movies, he's against somebody. He did two Jet Li movies, The One and War. Like, he likes teaming up with these other action guys. He teamed up with Stallone, The Expendables, but he's the number two guy. So it's hard when you go back to, like, what's the best Statham films. So I'm going to start with a movie where he's actually the star of the film and the lead. And it's a film that actually just came out a couple of years ago, directed by Guy Ritchie, called Wrath of Man. Mm. This was a huge surprise for me because, to me, Guy Ritchie could be hit or miss. I don't love all his films. There's some I like. There's some I don't really like. There's some I find okay. Wrath of Man was a movie I went into with pretty low expectations. And coming out, being one of my favorite films of that year. It was towards the bottom of my top 10, but it made my top 10. And Statham is just really good in the film, but it has a really great story. It's a revenge tale, but it doesn't feel like a cheap action movie. It feels like a very moody, hard R revenge film. And I think Guy Ritchie's direction and Statham's performance are just a perfect combination. These are two people who've worked together for a long time. Literally, the movie that put Statham on the map was Snatch, directed by Guy Ritchie. I'm not a huge Snatch fan. I thought I liked the film. I like Brad Pitt in that movie, but it's not a movie I go back and revisit very often. And Guy Ritchie, in the early in his career, I didn't love his movies. I didn't really start liking Guy Ritchie until later in his career. I really loved The Gentleman with Matthew McConaughey. Wrath of Man was right afterwards. I was like, wow, Guy Ritchie's on a freaking roll right now. I was like, he's made two movies I really love. So I'm going to start with Wrath of Man, an underappreciated gem that just came out a couple years ago. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Well, you tap danced on it, so I'm going to give it some love. My favorite Jason Statham movie is Snatch.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I love Snatch. I'll revisit that one annually. I think it's just a great, fun heist tale. And I think the characters are super interesting in this movie. But I like you, JT, agree. Like, Guy Ritchie can direct some serious stinkers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Guy Ritchie gave us last year's Operation Fortune.
Yeah, with Hugh Grant coming back and once again to work with him. I didn't hate that movie. Like, I know you and Benny were not big fans. I thought it was fine. It wasn't insultingly bad. It was just okay. But it was nowhere near as good as Wrath of Man or The Gentleman in my book.
But yeah, I will give some love to Snatch. I think Snatch is awesome. I've not seen Wrath of Man. Your endorsement of this, and I didn't know that was a Guy Ritchie movie. So your endorsement and knowing it's a Guy Ritchie movie, I'm going to check it out. I'm curious about it. But yeah, some love for Snatch. Bullet Tooth Tony is still one of my favorite characters. Love him. Love the Russian in that movie. It's Boris the Butcher. It's just such a fun, like I said, there's so many like fun characters in that movie, and there's so many like actors having fun playing these fun characters in that movie. So some love for Snatch.
Yeah, and I will say I'm in the minority who don't love that movie. Most people that love Guy Ritchie, they love him because of Snatch.
So I'm with Moose, Mike. I think Jason Statham's best movie is Snatch, and I don't think it's really even close. Like, looking at his filmography, you know, like, there's Snatch, there's a huge drop off, and then there's his other movies. But Snatch has already been taken, I would say I will throw out there the movie that Snatch lifts its blueprint from is Jason Statham's first movie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoky mm-hmm. Barrel. And Snatch is very much the same formula, the same structure, in a lot of ways, the same characters, a lot of the same cast as Lock, Stock. So if you've seen Snatch or if you like Guy Ritchie's period of time where he's doing a lot of cuts and a lot of quick jumps in time, Lock, Stock is sort of his framework for all of those kind of movies. And it is also a really good British heist comedy. And I've always really enjoyed it. I think Snatch is the same movie, really. It's just a better version of that same movie. But it's still a lot of fun to me. And Wrath of Man, I'll say, is a very good movie, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a Guy Ritchie movie. It's shot very, it's a very more of a traditional revenge action movie as opposed to a Guy Ritchie movie. So I think it's a good action movie, but it does, you know, it does feel necessarily like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, like, both of the movies you guys said, those feel, to me, that's Guy Ritchie. That's why I'm going to that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you could almost substitute somebody else with sort of Jason Statham. Those movies still work for me. I think Statham brings a lot to Wrath of Man. Like, it just, listen, Statham is a man of few words. It's more about how he's looking at you, how he's growling at you, and how he's kicking your ass. I'll give another film. Listen, action is where he kind of is known for. The Transporter movies were good for what they were at the time. B action movies that were in cinemas, they're fine. Then he did Crank, which is kind of insane. Yeah, that's a whole different mood. But I think I got to give a shout out to Fast 7. I think that's, you know, what Fast 5 did for The Rock. He, you know, brought a lot of life into that franchise, and it made him more of an action star. He was already an action star before he came to Fast 7. And the teaser for Fast 6, when you saw Jason Statham at the very end of that movie, you were like, oh my God, he killed Han. He's going to come back. And in Fast 7, he is a, like, agent of chaos. Every time they're on a mission, he comes out of nowhere and just messes up everything. And he goes toe-to-toe with Vin Diesel. Should have kicked Vin Diesel's ass. But I will say this, I wasn't a fan of Hobbs and Shaw. So, like, to me, it really, Statham needs to be with a good director. I think James Wan knew how to use him. You know, he does other movies where he pops up in, like, The Italian Job, where he's a side character. So Fast 7 is definitely, for me, one of the best uses of Statham. He just, and even Part 8, which was probably one of the weaker Fast and Furious films, that plane scene with him and the baby is one of the best scenes in that whole movie. And again, they just knew how to use Statham.
Okay, so I would say one thing about Statham, and this is the reason that I consider, like, Lock, Stock, and Snatch, like, the best out of his filmography, is Jason Statham over time has pigeonholed himself into, he plays one single character. He plays Jason Statham, gruff talking special forces agent that doesn't say much. And that is his entire filmography after his first year or two in movies.
Yep.
But when you watch, like, Lock, Stock, or Snatch, he's actually playing a character. He's still doing the Jason Statham action guy, but he's actually carrying dialogue, carrying emotion, things like that. He is immersing himself in a character, whereas really after his first year or two, like, pretty much all of his movies is just the same. We'll talk about it when we get to Beekeeper, but he's playing the beekeeper in every movie, really, since that first 2 years. And not that they're bad. Some of them are really entertaining movies. Like, my next one on my list would be The Meg, just because I love shark movies, and it's an action shark movie, so I enjoy it. But then again, they're not good movies, but most of Jason Statham movies aren't. They're just Jason Statham doing what he does since those early movies.
I do enjoy The Meg. I've told Benny this. I've told JT this. I have a fascination with sharks. I love to watch sharks. I've been in the water with sharks. I've been in shark tanks. Like, I love sharks. They fascinate me. The Meg is a terrible movie, but I enjoy it for what it is. It's a lot of fun. Like, when the Meg jumps out of the water and eats Rainn Wilson's helicopter, like, it's just a cinematic joy. But I chose to go in a different direction with Statham, because this was a role that he played that kind of poked fun at all of the other roles that he ended up playing. This is his kind of first foray into comedy. And that was his role in the movie Spy with Melissa McCarthy. Now, I love Melissa McCarthy. She's just got a direct line to my funny bone. I've loved her since The Heat. And like even some of her misses, there's still comedic moments in there, and she's got a lot of misses. But I do find, like, her incredibly funny. But in this movie, she was so overshadowed by Jason Statham's character in this movie. When he sits down and he's in the CIA meeting and he's like, fuck it. He's like, take me to the face-off machine. Let's do this. And they're like, that doesn't exist. He's like, I saw it in a movie. And they're like, no, that doesn't exist. He's like, well, Carl over there told me. They're like, he's like, no, really, you believe me? Like, he goes, I was pulling, like, just the role that he plays in that movie is so absurd. But again, you're in a movie with, like, Jude Law, Melissa McCarthy, Rose Byrne. Like, you're in this movie that has good, not just comedic actors, but good actors in this movie. And he steals it, completely steals the movie. And every scene, like, I would have loved a sequel to that movie with just McCarthy and Statham reprising roles. But yeah, I loved it. I love the movie Spy. It's such a guilty pleasure for me to watch, but like the end of the movie just ends with like him getting on a boat and he's like, sometimes a man has to go to sea. And they're like, yeah, he's in a lake, and he just drives off. Like, it's such a fun role for him. I love it.
Yeah, I was definitely going to bring this up because, like you said, it's him kind of poking fun at everything he's done before. But he has really good timing. He delivers the lines really well. Like, he was the highlight of that movie. He kind of stole the film. And that's saying a lot when you're the one person who's not a comedian amongst all these comedic actors. So, yeah, I got to give love for that. Listen, I mentioned earlier I love the Expendable movies. I know the fourth one was the worst one. Unfortunately, that's the one where he was trying to take it over. By that time, the series was out of gas. But those first two, specifically the first two Expendables, I think he plays a really good number two to Stallone. And he really gets to show his knife skills and his martial arts skills. He has a fight with Scott Adkins at the end of part two, which was like, for anybody who's in martial arts, that was just like a dream matchup, seeing those two guys go at it. And the first one, who's he fighting the first one? I think he just fights everybody. Because I think Randy Couture goes at it with Stallone. Stallone fights Stone Cold. And maybe Jason Statham fights Randy Couture. No, Randy Couture's on his team. I have to go back and watch Expendables now. Because I have to remember who he fought. But it wasn't really until the sequels where he really kind of was even with Stallone. Listen, the last movie I'll put out here from one of my favorite Statham films. This is a preview of our part three. I put Beekeeper up there as one of the best Jason Statham-led films. Because honestly, all his other ones are twofers, and the ones where he leads like the mechanic and transporter, they're okay. They're fine. I don't think they're that fun, to be honest with you. They're movies I'm not going to revisit as much, whereas I really enjoyed The Beekeeper, and it's a movie I definitely will see on my movie shelf, and I'll be throwing him with a bucket of popcorn every once in a while.
And I'm going to throw out an honorable mention for a movie called, I think it's called Mean Green. I may have the title wrong, but it's a comedy. It's actually, it's a British remake of The Longest Yard. And it stars Vinnie Jones and Jason Statham creating a soccer team to go against the guards. And I thought it was really funny, like when I initially saw it. I've not watched it in years. But it is a movie that I think would be worth revisiting because The Longest Yard, when it's done well, is a fun story, and it's a British version of that with the Guy Ritchie. It's not Guy Ritchie, but a lot of his sort of regulars from those early Jason Statham movies.
Holy crap, I have seen that movie. Oh my God, that's been forgotten in my memory banks until you just started to describe it. Yeah, I believe it is called Mean Green. Wow. Okay, well, I've got a couple of honorable mentions. He was Handsome Rob in The Italian Job. I still find that movie very charming. I still think it's a lot of fun. It's a good heist movie. And then his role in Collateral was awesome. He hands off the briefcase to Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Boom, let's get going. So
when that happens, you're like, oh, Statham's in this, and you never see him again.
He was the transporter. That's the whole idea. Technically, the transporter exists in a few different universes. So I will throw Collateral out there. I'll give you credit. I'll also agree with you, JT. I enjoyed Expendables 1 and 2 a lot. And Statham is a lot of fun in that. You're right. The whole knivesmanship that he does is pretty awesome. When him and like Stallone in the first movie, Stallone has his little like fast shooting gun and Statham throws the knife. Yeah. Like that whole little back and forth, like banter between the two of them is a lot of fun. So I will give it up for the Expendables 1 and 2.
And I did like Expendables 3 when Wesley Snipes gets broken out of jail and he used to be the knife guy. So now that we have two competing knife guys, that was a little bit of fun.
Well, I think we can agree. Like Statham, for the most part, has been pigeonholed as the action guy. He doesn't do a whole lot of like dramatic work. And so what you're going to get from Statham is you're going to get him in either a heist movie or you're going to get him in an action movie. Let's just be honest. But he's pigeoned himself into that. But you know what? He's also pigeonholed himself into our hearts. So Statham, keep him coming out. I would love to see you do more comedic roles. please choose a comedy as your next one. Stay away from David Ayer. He will ruin your career. But we'll talk about that next. So stick around and we'll see what's good for the hive in our review of The Beekeeper.
Bonjour.
What do a stolen diamond,
86 carats,
a four-fingered gambler, whoops, a thug named Bullet Tooth.
Should I call you Bullet Tooth? You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
And this guy.
Who are you?
Messy Baxter, concentrate.
What? Have in common?
I would have thought that was obvious.
You won't know until you sneak a peek at Snatch.
Size, size, size.
Did you understand a single word of what you just said?
Rated R.
We need your help.
Three Megs and who knows what else have escaped the trench.
What is the plan here?
I'm gonna kill them all. One by one.
Rock and roll.
Come on.
Meg to the trench. Rated PG-13.
Jason Statham is the transporter.
You deliver, no questions asked.
In a business with no room for error, they just made a mistake.
Why'd you try to kill me?
Mr. Transporter, you broke the rules. You opened the package.
From the maker of La Femme Nikita and The Professional, now, the transporter guarantees...
Where is he?
...a rush. The transporter.
Welcome back. We are talking Jason Statham's The Beekeeper, directed by David Ayer and written by Kurt Wimmer. If you don't know who Kurt Wimmer is, any great 80s and 90s action movie, he did the remake of it in the 21st century. He wrote the script for Point Blank, the remake, not the original. He wrote the script for Total Recall, the remake, not the original. He wrote the script for The Thomas Crown Affair, the remake, not the original. And then he wrote the script for this. So, oh, and he wrote the script for Expendables 4.
Oh, no. Well, so this
guy knows how to write a piece of crap. Let's give talk to The Beekeeper.
Let's give him some credit. He directed one of my favorite early 2000 action sci-fi movies, Equilibrium, with Christian Bale, that introduced Gun Kata. That movie still slaps today. So he has made some good stuff. Okay. If that movie is the only thing he's ever contributed, that's amazing. He has done enough.
That's fair. I'll give a little bit of love for Equilibrium as well. The Beekeeper came out number two this past weekend. So far, worldwide, this movie has made $41 million. So as always, we will kick off with our non-spoiler review of this movie. I'm going to have a very different opinion, so I will choose to defer to last. JTE, kick us off. You seem to really like this movie.
I did, man. You know, I remember if you follow me on Twitter, I was on my way to the theater to watch this movie, and Christian Harloff had just done his like out of the theater reaction the night before. So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna watch this. And he said, "Do you love 80s and 90s movies?" He's like, "Do you not care like if there's a plot or if things make sense?" He's like, "This was a really fun movie." And I said to myself, "Okay, I know what I'm going in for." I went Thursday night, sold out audience almost in IMAX. And the movie to me knows exactly what it's trying to do. Like, it is not trying to be some dead serious action, hard edge action movie. I talked to Christian Harloff after I watched this movie and I said, this reminded me of Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando. Commando does, to me, is not a very good movie. It is poorly acted in some ways. It's over the top. It's kind of ridiculous. But damn, do I have a good time every time I watch Commando. So that's the movie. Literally, I texted Christian Harloff after the movie. I said, and he said, I 100% agree. That's exactly how I feel. So we started just having conversation back and forth over what we thought of the movie and some things we didn't like. Because listen, this is not a perfect movie. I have issues with the film, which I'll get into a little bit more in spoilers. But man, was my audience ready for a Jason Statham R-rated kick-ass movie? Because this might affect my score a little bit. The audience that I was with was just eating it up, cheering, you know, just having the best time in this theater. And that may have affected my enjoyment of the film because I had a guy behind me who was just having the best time. People were laughing when they should have been laughing. People were cheering when they should have been cheering. Listen, the movie's ridiculous. It's insane. It's borderline bad at times. The dialogue is horrible, but I feel like the movie knows this. It is not taking itself too self-seriously. I mean, at one point in this movie, this is not a spoiler because I'm not going to get details, but like a character out of Fortnite pops out of nowhere and tries to take on Jason Statham. And I said, at that moment, I know exactly what this movie is trying to do, and I'm on board. And boy, did it reward that feeling, because this movie goes places that if you would have surveyed 1,000 people walking into this movie, it's like, where do you think this movie is going to end up? Nobody would have figured out exactly where this movie was going to end up. By the time the third act came, and once the audience and everybody kind of realized what was happening, everyone, like on a roller coaster, everybody's hands were in the air. We were ready to go on that ride. It was such a fun time. I can't wait to see it again. I hope there's a sequel. I want Beekeeper 2. I want to see this character come back, and I want it to be even more ridiculous than it was this time. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. Again, is it a good movie? Like, if you're handing your paper into the teacher, this is probably not going to get a good grade. But damn it, I had a good time.
So I have my mic muted while JTE is talking, and so I know this is a podcast. If you could have seen me, I started laughing out loud when JTE started talking about Commando. When I was gathering my thoughts for what I was going to say about this movie, my opening statement was going to be, one of my all-time favorite action movies is Commando. That was literally going to be my opening statement. And The Beekeeper, it starts out very much in the vein of Commando. There's a very simple revenge tale, and then there's a lot of people being killed in some really cool ways. And for the first half of this movie, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be my favorite movie of the year. It was staying in that cheesy 80s Commando revenge tale pocket, and I was there for it. Now, probably the last 30 to 45 minutes, it veers out of that pocket and goes into absurdity. And I know JTE was on for that ride. At that point, I was like, no, dudes, I'm over here in the Commando lane. Come back, motherfuckers. And they just kept going off to the side. So I would say that the movie was very mixed for me. Like, the first half of it, I absolutely loved. The second half, it was fun, but it was stupid. And so in the end, it ended up being kind of a middle of the road. It's something I enjoyed, something I'll watch again. But had it stayed in that pocket that it had for that first 45 minutes or so, buddy, this would have been in my top 10 at the end of the year.
I can't wait to get into spoilers after we hear Moose's thoughts, because I can't wait to dissect where you and I jumped off the roller coaster.
So you said something, that this movie knows exactly what it wants to be. Sadly, I have a complete opposite opinion. This movie has no idea what it wants to be. This movie is shocking. It's shocking how bad this movie is. This movie is garbage. I'm sorry, Hollywood, it's your old pal Moose. Please stop giving David Ayer movies. He's a terrible director. Terrible director. I liked Fury. He showed promise with Fury, but then you gave him the Suicide Squad, and that movie's god awful. And then I've tried multiple times to watch a movie Bright. Like, that movie should be incredible. You're talking Lord of the Rings and Dungeons and Dragons meets like real life. Oh, but wait, that movie's god awful. And then you give a concept like this. I'm sorry. The Beekeeper, John Wick has done it better. The Equalizer has done it better. This movie is The Equalizer. Yes, it is. This is absolutely a clandestine behind the scenes organization. This is retired leader of this organization at one point in time. I'm sorry. The organization is called the Beekeepers. And then for no reason that's ever explained, he retires and becomes a beekeeper.
It's to protect the hive.
Yeah, I know. They said that 45 times in the movie, but that doesn't explain why he chooses to retire from being a assassin, part of a group called the Beekeepers, to become a beekeeper. I'm not going to go into too much spoilers because I can't wait to rip this thing apart during spoilers, but I'm sorry, this movie does not work. I understand I'm not an action aficionado. Listen, there were some fun action sequences, and JT, you mentioned the character from Fortnite that showed up. Dude, she's in it for 30 seconds. She could have been the greatest part of this movie. I had such high hopes for this character and was like, wow, what a bad... Oh, wait, she's dead. I'm sorry. There's so many bad steps. I legitimately think that this movie was... The first script of this movie was as a spoof. And then halfway through filming, they were like, you know what? We could make this into a pretty good action movie. I laughed at times when you should not be laughing. I groaned at least 20 times during this movie. This movie confounds me. It does.
I would argue there's no point where you cannot laugh at this movie.
There is. The escalation in this movie is absurd. This movie goes from a small contained story to it skips light speed and it goes to Plaid. Okay, if you understand that reference, it's a Spaceball reference. But this movie is confounds me. And here's why this movie confounds me. This is the worst movie I have ever seen, but I'll probably watch it 8 more times. Like, the movie is an enigma wrapped in a riddle of how terrible it is, but yet some of the action sequences work and some of the kills are kind of cool. So, look, see it for yourself because it's worth seeing just to go like, yeah, I witnessed something that was worse than The Room.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I hated this movie so much, and I'll go into it more in spoilers. But, yeah, the action sequences were fun. Statham is Statham. He's doing his Statham growl. You're absolutely right. He's just basically playing himself in this movie, right? And every other character. But I've said it before. This movie is Commando. Yeah, it stole a lot from Commando. This movie is Taken. Yeah, it stole a lot from Taken. This movie is John Wick. Yeah, it stole a lot from John Wick. This movie is The Equalizer. It stole a whole hell of a lot from The Equalizer. But guess what? All of those movies I mentioned that it stole from are way better than this movie. Again, see this movie. This is the worst movie I'll probably see 8 more times in my life.
I'll just, before we get into spoilers, I'll push back just a little bit. I think the movies you mentioned, John Wick, Equalizer, they are doing something very different, I think, than this movie is. Yes, this skeleton might be the same, but it's a very different body upon that skeleton, my friend. This movie, I think, where it's you and not- I disagree, is that it knows what it's trying, how ridiculous, how over the top, and
just that's the thing. It doesn't know that. No, it doesn't. Like,
how can you say that when the characters show up in this movie are cartoons?
They are legitimately trying to put every type of movie trope. It's like interpretive art, right? You can take a handful of paint and throw it against the wall, and it'll look like crap, but somebody may walk along and be like, that is a piece of art. That's what this movie is. It's a hunk of crap thrown against the wall that other movies have done way better. And I will point out exactly how this movie is The Equalizer. I will point out exactly how this movie is.
Should we jump into spoilers or how are you feeling?
Sure.
All right. Spoilers from here on out. Let's get into it. Go ahead, Moose.
Okay. One, Felicia Rashad. Her daughter works for the FBI in the Cyber Crimes Division. She had her money taken, which spurs old Statham out of beekeeping retirement to go back to an active beekeeper to protect the hive. Is she has all of her money stolen and instantly commits suicide. I'm sorry, her daughter works for the cyber division. She doesn't even call her daughter. Like, so the initial revenge plot from the beginning of the movie makes no sense once they introduce her daughter.
I disagree. I think because her daughter is in the cyber division, she knows she's not going to get that money back. She knows that there's no way for the government, who are restricted within the rules of the government and society, the police cannot go ahead and get that money. It was gone.
I'm sorry.
Know who can? The beekeeper, because he protects the hive. He works outside of the law.
You said she doesn't know. She manages a $2 million hedge fund in the movie, right? She then picks up the phone and she falls for the most obvious cyber scam that exists. And you're telling me that she knows better, that she knows that the money has been taken and she wouldn't call her daughter who works for the FBI? Get the fuck out of here.
My parents could barely work a Blu-ray player. I believe this woman had no idea what was going on.
I think that's called stretching it. Okay. So in the first Equalizer movie, Denzel Washington never uses a gun, right? He finds creative ways in a Home Depot to be able to basically take out his opponents, right? That is exactly what Jason Statham does in this movie. The first gang that shows up to attack him, he does not use a gun at all. He comes up with creative ways in his garage with different tools to be able to maim and kill and murder. There is literally one kill that is taken straight from The Equalizer. I know because we reviewed The Equalizer recently and I watched all three. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, okay, well, Denzel's better. the whole John Wick, like the Continental, right? You can call in and you can put hits out on people and you can get information. Well, so does Statham. Right, the whole idea behind the beekeepers is basically the table from the John Wick movies. And again, those movies are far more superior. I understand the whole concept of turn your brain off and watch an action movie. I'm sorry. There's so many foul plays in this movie that I can't turn my brain off. There is a scene that takes place at the FBI headquarters. And all I can focus on in that scene are these two guys fixing a ceiling leak that's dripping for 5 minutes. And then at one point in the movie, one of the FBI agents goes like, hey, you up for going for a road trip? And she's like, yeah. Oh, that's good because your mom's house is on fire. I'm sorry. Your mom died yesterday. Now her house is on fire. And that's the way that you choose to approach that conversation. Dialogue in this movie is atrocious.
Listen, one of my biggest criticisms of this film is the daughter and her partner. Anytime the movie goes to those two FBI agents, the movie drags a little bit for me. Like, I just want to get back to Statham. So, like, that to me is probably the biggest issue I have with the movie is that I just didn't really care about the daughter in that storyline. Just get me back to Statham. It's basically them just showing up to the crime scene every time Statham wrecks house. But here's the thing. You say this, you know, like, oh, Equalizer was better. John Wick was better. Yeah, of course those are better movies.
Yeah. But
I still watch every Chuck Norris movie that came out in the 80s. Missing in Action was just trying to be Rambo. This is what happens when you have action genre. Movies are going to rip off the same kind of – The Equalizer and all the things are just ripping off movies from the 80s and 90s. I know that going in. I know, okay, I see what you're doing here. You're doing John Wick. You're doing Equalizer. But the tone in this movie – is so different from those other films that you mentioned. John Wick does get a little bit more into the comic book realm and kind of, you know, insane, you know, with the suits that are bulletproof and stuff. This movie is a little bit more B movie and a little bit more about the absurdity of Statham is almost untouched throughout this whole movie until the very end. And that's what I was loving about this film. The fact that he just kept taking on dudes without any guns, any weapons. He is a person in this movie who is like on a god level. He has got all the cheat codes. He can't be killed. He can't be touched. And at some point, I was like, this is ridiculous, and I'm having a blast. Same way I feel about Commando. You watch that movie, and it's ridiculous. Arnold is just doing everything and anything. You know, he's walking through a field. There's 30 guys shooting machine guns at him, and he's not getting hit once. But he has one machine gun. He's taking out everybody. He blows up a house. It doesn't just blow up. It turns into confetti. The explosions are exaggerated. Statham is exaggerated in this movie. He is the Terminator. That's what he is in this movie, and that's what I enjoyed about it.
See, I understand the idea of taking concepts from other movies. I absolutely do. But just make a good movie. This isn't a good movie. You didn't take a concept and do anything with it. You took the concept from these other movies and you shit on it.
Well, I think we need to get into the third act because, and Moose, or Benny, I want to definitely hear about where you jumped off. But when the reveal, Josh Hutcherson's having a blast playing the biggest douchebag in this movie. I thought he was so much fun. I thought Jeremy Irons was having a lot of fun. I thought all the actors in this movie kind of knew what movie they were in and were just chewing up the scenery, especially Josh Hutcherson, and especially the South African guy at the end, who is is one of my favorite things about the whole movie.
Oh my god, no. Because he's the worst part of the movie.
He looks like a reject Mortal Kombat character who came into this thing. He reminded me of the bad guy from Commando who ends up fighting Arnold at the end. And that knife fight they have at the very end was freaking awesome. So for me, that third act, once you find out that Josh Hutcherson's mom is the president, and that and they literally go to an island, and Jason Statham, you know at this point that he is going to go take out the president of the United States. That's when I threw my hands up in the air and said, movie, you have me. I'm ready to go wherever you're about to take me. And the audience reaction when the president, everyone realized it was the president, applause. People were applauding in my movie theater.
Oh, no, they were not. That is.
I swear to you. No. I swear to God.
It was funny because what was happening between me and the people that were sitting, the only two people that were sitting in the theater behind me, was I started groaning. And I realized I was doing that. And I was like, and they were literally sitting right behind me. And I was like, I need to stop doing that. And then they started to groan. And at one point, like, I looked back and we made eye contact. And I was like, and we just shook our head like, this is the stupidest movie.
Different strokes, different folks. I don't have to tell you, man. My audience was loving it.
The escalation of where this movie goes. Fine. Josh Hutcherson can be the final villain. But the fact that his mom, the fact that one, his father, Jeremy Irons, was head of the CIA. And then his mother is what is now the president of the United States. It's like, oh, come on, man.
Love it. Have you ever seen that in a movie before, though? That's why I appreciate it, because I've never seen a movie where the main character has to literally is like, I'm going to go kill the president, and only because she has a bad, evil seed. I just didn't see it coming. I love going to movies, and when you could show me something I haven't seen before, you earned brownie points with me.
Welcome back, Benny.
Sorry about that.
Benny stepped down for a bit. Benny, so I want to hear, when did you enjoy the first half hour? When did the movie jump the shark for you, or nuke the fridge?
Okay. When the new beekeeper, as you guys call it, the Fortnite character, shows up, like, yeah. I'm like, okay, that's not consistent with everything up till now. But she dies really quick. So I'm like, okay, that was just kind of a weird moment. We'll move on and get back to this revenge tale. But then after that, you know, I enjoy where he's going through the big building, killing everyone. I was like, okay, now we're back in the zone. Now we're back in the pocket. But then after everything after that, like towards the final scene where it jumps up to his mom's the president, he's fighting the entire Secret Service.
Yes.
You know, like all of that, it becomes at that point like a fantasy sci-fi movie, as opposed to this like really simple revenge tale. Like it was in that really sweet B movie revenge action movie zone. But then after that, when you talk about him going into God mode, like I felt like he was a video game character up to that point. But then after that, it wasn't even a video game anymore. It was like a really god awful comic book movie after that point, like, and not in a good way. And the South African guy absolutely killed it for me. Like, so he's killed 85 men. He just fought his way through SEAL Team 6, the entire FBI SWAT team, and we're supposed to be worried about a dude with one leg messing him up.
Now, remember, he lost that leg because he actually is the only person who has killed the beekeeper previous. So that's what put him on another level. So immediately that tells me, okay, he lost a limb, but he lost it by – he's one of the only guys that's ever killed a beekeeper. So that tells you, all right, this is not just another SWAT SEAL Team 6 or whatever. It's not a Special Forces guy. This guy has actually messed with beekeepers before. So he's a little bit closer to being on Jason Statham's level than anybody else.
He's literally a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. Literally. That's what he is.
And that's why he gets his ass kicked.
With what I would consider like an offensively bad South African impersonation. It's terrible.
I don't know if it's impersonation or if he's actually South African.
He's not. He's totally putting up, like, at first I was like, is that New Zealand? like, I'm trying to pick out the accent until he finally says something about South Africa. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That guy was the worst. Oh, God. This movie's so terrible.
I remember being in the theater when you're like, how's he going to get in this freaking place? And when he gets behind, when he goes under the car, and he kills the guy on the little, you know, cart whose job is to check for bombs, and he shoves him in the car, puts on the ski mask, and then just rolls out and walks right into the president compound. Once again, my theater was laughing and applauding because this guy is just walking through all this security. I love the absurdity that this movie went to. Like, it's funny, all three of us have totally different, like, mixed for Benny. He was in it for the first half. Moose, you hated it. And I pretty much liked it from beginning to end. So I love that all three of us all have different tastes when it comes to, I guess, this kind of movie.
Now, I will say this. I definitely want to see a part two of Beekeeper.
Hell yeah.
Because I feel like if instead of this jumping up to the president and the one-legged ninja, like if it had just been he was going to Josh Hutcherson's evil compound and he was going to fight his way through 50 mercenaries and then savagely kill Josh Hutcherson, I think after that, you know, this is a movie that I'm buying.
Yep.
You know, but when it just went a little too far from there, but I would like to see a sequel because I'm a sucker for things like that.
Yeah, that's so funny because like if they just went to a basic compound that was no name and just a bunch of people getting killed, I'd be like, oh, this is still a good action movie. But the absurdity of going to the president is what made it better for me. Like, I like when things go to a point of absurdity. Like, From Dusk Till Dawn is a movie that I have some friends who don't like that movie because the first half of that movie is just a really cool Tarantino crime film. And then halfway through, From Dusk Till Dawn becomes a freaking vampire gore fest. It's like two movies that were cut in half and put together. This movie isn't quite that, but the fact that it just keeps one-upping itself with how ridiculous it is, I enjoy that. I enjoy having that unknown and seeing something that I've never seen in a movie before. Again, this is not a great movie. It is not really a good movie, but it is a movie I thought so entertaining, has so much fun with. I knew what I was going into, and I got more than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, I had fun with it. I'll definitely say I liked the movie more than I disliked it. I wouldn't complain about seeing it again by any means. But I think it does create a problem with the sequel is that in your first movie, you've escalated to the point where you're literally killing the Secret Service and the president. Well, when you get to part two, where are you jumping up? Like, obviously, in the first half of the movie, you have to kill the United Nations. But then after that, what? Starfleet? Where do you go?
Yeah, Mars, maybe. Let's take a Total Recall style. Beekeeper has to go to Mars. I do, we'll say this, you know, David Ayer, you know, has gotten some hate here and there. But I think the action scenes are really well shot in this movie. And, that, you know, when it comes to action scenes, when I watch an action movie, I don't want, you know, Taken 2 and 3, where it's just chopped cut everywhere. And it's just, you know, I don't want to see 100 cuts in my action scenes. And while some of the cutting in this was kind of quick, there were still scenes like that last fight with the South African guy was very brutal, in your face. The scenes, you know, where he's taking out the SWAT teams, I thought it was all really well shot action. And to me, that's important for me. When I watch an action movie, I need to have the action have a good flow, good cuts, and not just feel choppy. And I thought David Ayer did a good job of shooting the action.
I've said my piece about David Ayer. Please, again, Hollywood, your old friend Moose, been visiting you now for 40 years. Please, please do not let David Ayer direct anything further. Maybe some music videos. I'll be okay with that. I can live with that. I don't watch music videos, but I've said my piece on this movie. I'm not going to change my mind on it. What I will say is this. The action sequences were fun. They were completely unbelievable. I mean, there is one part where Statham walks up like and stands in the middle of 10 FBI SWAT members. This isn't just your average, like, you know, Springfield SWAT team, right? No. This is the elite. This is the FBI SWAT team. He walks right up into the middle of them and he takes them all out without firing a single bullet. Listen,
the Springfield Police Department is exceptionally corrupt. So they would have just shot him. There would not have been a scene. They would have shot him and then covered it up.
I find it so funny that like in these types of movies, we're just supposed to believe that, I understand he's from this elite organization. We're just supposed to believe that everyone that Statham goes against is just a complete and utter idiot. And they don't see him walking up. They don't see a guy wearing a flannel jacket and a hat walking up in a crime scene outside of the FBI building. Like, there's just so much in this movie that makes my brain hurt. I like to turn off my brain. I couldn't analyze this movie down to its core because there's just so many discrepancies in this movie that you go, oh, come on. But I, because it's that bad, I urge people to see this movie. Like I do. I give me 5 Beekeeper movies. I'll continue to watch them because the absurdity is so ludicrous in these movies. I came up with something I told my wife earlier. I was going to say it. I thought it was frighteningly funny how frighteningly bad this movie was. And again, watch it, folks. I think everyone is going to have their opinions on movies. I mean, that's why movies are so divisive. But watch this movie. I think it's terrible. JT thinks it's a ton of fun. Benny's right in the middle saying, like, hey, the first half of it is great. The second half of it is bad. But it's worth watching for you to generate an opinion about how a movie like this gets made nowadays. And hey, maybe it's a callback to great classic, you know, 90s action movies. I like all those great classic 90s action movies. I don't know why I wouldn't have liked this if this was a callback to those. That's my final thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you there. I remember when I was going to the theater to see this, I was like, I'm going to go check Rotten Tomatoes because I'm guessing this movie's in the 30s, maybe the 40s. But when I right before I left the theater, it was at 73% and Mean Girls was at like 70. And I said, oh my God, this is getting better review than Mean Girls. Now, since then, it's now, I think, in the mid-60s, the high-60s. So more people saw it, so it went down a little bit. But I was surprised that it had that good word of mouth going into the movie. And like I said, it's funny to hear, you know, your reaction, Moose. I actually went and watched some football this weekend, and I had a discussion with our buddy Greg Gaynor, a.k.a. The Barbarian. I don't know if I pronounced his last name right. He did not like the movie at all. Craig.
I knew I liked Craig.
Yeah, you and Craig are on the same wavelength when it comes to this movie. But like, and then I talked to Christian Harloff. We both loved it. So everyone seems to be mixed on this. I listened to a few film podcasts where literally 2 people liked it and then the third person hated it. So it does seem to be a pretty decisive film. It's something that I feel like I'll go back and rewatch for sure. And I would love to see a sequel. It is not one of the great action movies. It is not, you know, something that I'm going to be putting up there as like one of the best, you know, action films, but it is a very fun movie. And it, I do think it's one of Statham's better films where he's the lead. I'm talking about like where he's the lead of an action film. I think this is one of his better films.
Holy crap. This is at a 94% audience rating.
Yeah, buddy. I'm telling you, I'm not lying when my audience was having the best time. And that might have affected my movie going experience. Like I was having so much fun with that audience. People were laughing, cheering. It was like a great theater going experience, which is why I love streaming. You know, I get to watch a lot of cool stuff. I love my Blu-ray collection, but to me, nothing beats going to a movie opening night when the whole audience is just on board and having a great time. So I think it's infectious. I think that's why I enjoyed the movie probably more than if I just watched it at home, if I rented it. So the theater going experience to me is still the number one way to watch a movie.
I think for most people and myself included, like if you're judging this movie on pass fail, it's a pass. You know, like if you're, you know, it's not going to get like a 5-star A+, but a pass fail, it's a pass. It's a fun movie. And if you go back for the past couple of months, like it, I think if you maybe since Mission Impossible, the last time that you just had a fun movie in the theater, it's probably been that long because there was nothing really coming out during the strike. The movies that have been coming out since then, with a few exceptions, like obviously I love Godzilla Minus One, but even that is kind of a more serious take on that genre. There's not just been a fun, silly movie that you don't have to put too much in and just go and relax. It's been like 6 months since that's been in the theater. So the fact that it's an okay action movie and it's the first time we've had an okay action movie in almost a half of a year, I think people are just primed to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I liked it more than Aquaman. You know, Aquaman was probably the last movie kind of in it where it's just go turn your brain off and have fun. I enjoyed this movie more.
I would take Aquaman 8 times over this movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But no, again, as much as I'm trashing the movie, I do respect your guys' opinion on this. Like,
yeah, we respect yours. I get it. You're not the only one.
Movies are always divisive, so we will always have our own opinions on these movies. This movie just did not hit with me in any way, shape, or form. Maybe I wasn't doing a good enough job. Maybe I should have drank before going into this movie and it would have had much more fun.
Listen, you're not alone. Craig hated it too. We were arguing all day on Sunday. So you're not alone.
Knew I really liked that guy. Well, gentlemen, we are going to wrap it up. Folks, we appreciate you always tuning in. Please, from the bottom of your extra movie butter boys' hearts, be the best person that you can be.
Buzz, buzz, everybody.